Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Hey parents, Tim Wright here along with Dr. Michael Gurian, the Wonder Parenting Podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. We are here with another question from you, our listeners, and this is one I picked up off of our Facebook page, and we're going to get to it in just a moment. First, I want to start with a little Gurian gold, and it's right in line with what we're talking about today, Michael. This is from your first big book, The Wonder of Boys, and you say here, as kids get older, girls seem to have more opportunity and more encouragement than boys to get advanced education. In recent years, females outmatriculated males in both college and graduate school. So this was written when, again?
Yeah, isn't that amazing? 1990. I wrote it between 94 and 95. It came out in 96.
Yep. And this is even more true today than it was probably back then.
Even more.
Yep. Talk a little bit about what it is, and then we're going to dig deep into this a little bit with our question for today.
Oh, yeah. This has been going on. So since the 80s, we started noticing the trend that that girls were doing better, you know, at all levels of schooling. And then when it came to, you know, graduating high school, in other words, not dropping out, graduating, then when it came to going to college, right, then grad school, et cetera, girls were just doing better. And the numbers kept, the gap kept expanding, so that now the gap's around, you know, there's around 40% of college students are boys, young men, and around 60% are women, young women. So the gap's gotten very wide, and it's supposedly going to become around 2/3 to 1/3 in about 5 years, the way the trend is going.
Wow.
So this has been, we've been watching this for a long time, and I know that people, and I even say this in those books, that it's counterintuitive to people, because what we hear in the media and social media, right, is that girls are struggling, they're victims, and education is set up for boys, it's not set up for girls, and all of that. And that's what we've heard for decades, but that's not actually true. There are certain professions that of course are male dominant, but when it comes to the whole arc of schooling and of education, it's way better set up for girls and for the female brain. And so that's kind of what I brought to the conversation, starting with The Wonder of Boys, and then what I've been doing since, and the Gurian Institute team is showing people actually that kind of public concept is incorrect. And here's the data. The way that we teach in our schools is set up much more for the female brain than the male. So we have a mismatch between the male brain and the schooling system. And then that, you know, goes all the way through to college. There's a mismatch for guys in college. It's better set up for girls and women. And the mismatch doesn't affect 100%, but it affects enough. So yeah. I divide it into three major groups. You have 1/3 of guys are going to do fine. You drop them in the middle of the road, they're going to learn and graduate. So it doesn't matter how you teach them, they're going to do fine. 1/3 are kind of middle of the road. They're going to get by, they're going to do okay. They could be getting A's, but they'll, you know, get B's or C's and B's, but they'll be okay. But then you got the other third, and those are the ones that are creating the gap. They're dropping out. They hate school by seventh grade. They're tardy, they're absenteeism, they're getting D's and F's and all of that. So it's really that one third right there. And the number of girls that are in that one third is way, way smaller. I'd say around 10% of girls, whereas I'd say around 33% of boys could be in that category.
Okay. And we're going to talk a little bit more about why that is today with our question. Just a reminder that we are brought to you by Man Cave. Men all need to be actively engaged, vested, and encouraged. And Man Cave seeks to take a leadership role and encourages positive relationships of fathers and male role models with their children. They promote the importance of nurturing fathers and mothers, parenting and healthy marriages, and in so doing, improve the lives of children and family. That's Man Cave here in the Phoenix area. Dr. Marion Hill, you can learn more about them at wonderofparenting.com, wonderofparenting.com. So the title for our podcast today is The Trouble with Teaching Boys. This was, again, on Facebook. And thought, wow, this is something we've been talking about for 5 years, and let's keep talking about it because it is an issue. I'm curious what Michael Gurian or others would suggest with this. I lead a small group of teenage girls, but my friend and husband lead a small group of middle school and teenage boys at our church. They've been voicing a lot of frustration lately because the boys are pretty goofy in the group, wrestling around and won't engage in conversation. The girls are completely different. Sitting around and chatting seems to be their jam. I feel conflicted when I listen to them talk about what's going on in group. On one hand, this seems pretty disrespectful that the boys can't sit. On the other hand, are we asking them to engage in the wrong way? Ooh, ding, ding, ding. I'm curious what you would say about teaching middle school boys about faith and best ways to engage them. We'll expand them just to teaching boys, period. Thank you. I'm happy to hear from any in the community. And of course, you got some great responses on our Facebook page. Just do a little search, Wonder Parenting, ask to join. We'll let you in. But Michael, it's not just people leading groups of boys and girls in church or synagogues or mosques. It's people asking these questions in the education field as well. So we've talked about this a number of times, but this helps us get a bit specific about teaching, which we were just talking about. So give us the Gurian overview, and then we'll dive in.
Okay. Yeah, the overview is, and she's very wisely asking, on the other hand, are we asking them to engage in the wrong way?
Yep.
And then you said, ding, ding, and you're so right, and she's so right. And I want to say that this is a bit of a social movement, which you, Tim Wright, are a large part of in getting this information and this science about how to teach boys into churches.
Right.
Right. And so I'm going to say some things, but then you got to say some things because sure. You change the way you do your church, right? Yep. Around this information.
Yep.
So the core concept of this is if we're going to engage boys in any kind of learning, then we need to do it strategically. So we need to have movement-based activities so they're not sitting. And let me put in a parenthesis, when they goof around like they will do, when they're just sort of called together, we're going to learn about Joseph today and they're called together. They're adolescent boys. They're going to goof around to posture, to bond, right? To figure out hierarchies like that they're built to do that. So if we don't give them these other strategies, they are going to do that. Well, the strategies that we want to give them are movement-based activities. So if we're going to learn about Joseph, since it just came to my mind, if we're going to learn about Joseph, then like when we review the facts about Joseph's story, we do a ball toss review. Mm. Which is where one of them says something and then he tosses the ball to another one and they're standing in a circle. And so there's a bunch of movement there. There's objects moving through space so that their eyes are paying attention to that. They're still tied to the lesson. It's still tied to the lesson. But the strategy is, getting their brain to activate around the lesson in a way that involves movement and physical activity. And so what we call kinesthetic. We also are going to play games with them. We're going to do competition, like who can hit the buzzer quickest to tell us how long Joseph spent down in the well or whatever it is, you know, and we make it a game, we make it a competition, we use game theory, you know, to get them activated, and then have them act it out. So have them write the script. They're doing a task. The task is purposeful, right? We're going to write the Joseph story in a script. And then they do their various talent sets. One of them is really shy, doesn't want to act, but could do the lighting or could do the music, could bring in a keyboard, you know, to do the music. So these are all sort of like project-based learning that involve movement, involve games, involve them getting their talents involved, you know, and doing storytelling and all of that. That then they will be engaged and they will learn the Joseph story or whatever it is. And they will learn algebra and they will learn calculus and they will learn, you know, Shakespeare, because it's being taught to them in a way that engages them.
So we're going to come back. We're going to dig deeper into that as we always do. You're listening to the Wonder Parenting Podcast, a brain science approach to parenting, and we will be right back.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, Michael, the question is, boys need all of this. Why? What's going on in their brains that's different than what's going on in a girl's brain?
Okay, yeah. Okay, so if this is the first time someone has heard our podcast, I beg you to go listen to the evergreen ones, because boy, we have delved into this for years, and it is so fascinating. So the male and the female brain are set up differently. They are set up differently from, you know, in utero. And as I've said, when I go give talks at schools or at conferences, I actually show scans that show results from fetuses who are not born yet. Now MRIs can look into the fetal brain. And at 8 months, at 9 months, you can already see male-female brain difference. So between the brains of the fetal boys and the fetal girls. So it's wired in through the X and the Y chromosomes. The brains differentiate. When kids come out, their brains are set up differently. We are all human, of course. There's a lot of variety, but they're also set up differently. So the female brain is set up to do words on both sides of the brain. And it does not have, it's not set up with as large and as active a cerebellum, which is the doing center of the brain, as the male brain. The male brain has a larger cerebellum, which is the doing center of the brain, doing meaning moving around, doing things, and not sitting, and more active. So one of the patterns that we see very early is that girls are able to sit for longer periods of time while learning, while conversing, while studying the alphabet, while coloring, et cetera. Even while reading, they're able to sit for longer periods of time. And also they develop their words earlier. So they're sitting more and they're using words more. So when they go into a setting like, you know, these, even when they're teens, the girls are more likely to be able to sit longer and to use more words while sitting. The boys are only doing words on one side of the brain. So boys are doing visual, spatial or spatial mechanical visual graphic, doing a lot more of that on the right side where they're not doing words. And so when we set up situations that rely on sitting and using words, which is how things are traditionally taught, right? Whether it's public school, private school, or Sunday school, that's how it's traditionally taught, right? Very busy people are teaching. And so they're like, well, I got 10 kids here. I got 20 kids here. I'll just have them sit and we'll make it very word oriented. We'll talk about it, or I'll write it up on the board and we'll talk. When that is the system, the system is going to fail a lot more boys than girls, because girls' brains are set up for that. And some boys' brains are, but, you know, a lot are not. What they need in order to engage their whole brain in a lesson is they also need the visuals, like, you know, things moving around, or stories with pictures, all that, visuals. They also need their cerebellum to be involved, so where they're moving around, which is how kids were educated, you know, like 1,000, 2,000 years ago. They were always moving around doing tasks. There was not a lot of sitting and learning. Sitting and learning is the last 150 years or so, right? These guys were learning, and they were learning by moving around, doing things, building things. That's the spatial mechanical, throwing things back and forth, which now would be balls, but previously could have been, you know, anything, sticks, anything. And that's how they learned. They learned while they were doing those tasks. And it's because these brains are set up differently, but because we're not taught this, right? Our teachers are not taught this. Our Sunday school teachers are not taught this. None of us are really taught this. I, as a counselor, educator, was not taught this in grad school. I didn't see the brain scans that show this, these significant differences between boys and girls. And of course, nor does a Sunday school teacher see these, right? So they don't know, and they're wonderful people teaching and volunteering, but they don't know. So the class is set up for the girl's brain. It's set up, let's sit, let's come in. We have this half hour. Let's sit and let's talk about Joseph. And what did we learn? But a lot of those boys' brains are not set up for that. And so once we do these strategies, which, by the way, are not hard to learn, and anyone listening to this, you can go on GurianInstitute.com, and anyone who's in any teaching setting can just go to the products button and just get the online course, in which I show all the brain scans and do all of this. You know, it's a 4-hour online course that you can take over a 6-month period. And you can see it all. And people do it. And then they alter the way they do teaching. And then these issues that she's talking about, you know, where all the kids are as goofy and they're not paying attention, you know, a lot of that goes away because they're so engaged and they feel so empowered as learners. And the teacher's life is way easier, you know, because the teacher's not dealing with all the classroom management stuff and being mad at the kids for what they're doing or correcting them. And right, because they're now learning, and it's, and they're learning well because we understood the male brain and we understood that it is set up differently than the female brain.
If you were to create a class, co-ed class, boys and girls, and you skewed that class toward the male brain, what impact does that have on the girls?
It will have very little negative impact, if any. It probably will have no negative impact on the girls, and some positive. And that will depend on the subject. And here's why. So the female brain is going to learn, and I'm just going to take an average female brain that could have brain disorder or other issues, but I'm going to take an average female brain. Girls sitting in a classroom, right? They're reading the book, the textbook. They're talking about what's in the textbook, and they're learning what's in the textbook. And they're doing a lot of that with words and while sitting. And they're learning it well, let's say. Let's say we introduce 10 minutes in the classroom is going to be ball toss review, and they're throwing the ball around. And that means they have to get up and move around. Well, they're still going to learn it, and they're going to get physical activity. They're going to have the camaraderie and the laughter that happens, which is really good dopamine, really good, you know, the ball's going to come to them. They're going to miss it. Everyone's going to laugh. They're going to pick it up, throw it to the next guy or next gal. She's going to get it or miss it. And, you know, there's a whole kind of milieu and community that develops in a classroom that uses these strategies. And the girls will gain from that and all the bonding of that. And they're still learning it. And in fact, there's some things they'll learn and mainly retain memory wise, you know, because the ball came at them and it imprinted, you know, the ball came at them and they said, Joseph was down in the well for this long. Well, it actually, because of that physical and that object moving through space, they might get more memory imprinting in the hippocampus. So they might actually learn even better than just sitting and reading. So I would see no negative for the girls. The only way I could see a negative is if someone went way, way overboard, you know, and said, well, yeah, and this sometimes happens, by the way, in classrooms where you have, 15 boys and 3 girls. And that's just right. The way that ended up, the demographic ended up. And so then the classroom has to skew toward boys in order to be effective. And then, you know, some of those girls are like, okay, I don't need that. That's too much. And I get that. She's right.
Yep.
So it could go too far, but in general, it does not. In general, the insertion of these strategies, you know, takes up a third of the classroom time, and the rest of the time is sitting, you know, or half of the classroom time, and the rest is sitting. So no harm to girls.
In fact, I think you've got the research that says when you skew a little bit more toward the boys, the grades for both go up.
Right. When the boys and girls learn differently, strategies are used. So our whole program, if people go to greeninstitute.com, they're going to see it's utilizing boys and girls learn differently, which was kind of that seminal text that I wrote that's co-wrote. I mean, a lot of people helped me, that's been used all over the world. And in that, that's where we did our 2-year pilots at University of Missouri, Kansas City in the 6 school districts. And that's where we first saw the data that when we did boys and girls learn differently, so we're teaching teachers and teaching parents about both male and female brain. We're not only teaching about one brain, right? We're teaching about both male and female brain, what works best. How do you make STEM work better for girls? How do you make, you know, this reading, social studies, all this work better for boys? Grades for both boys and girls go up. Test scores for both boys and girls go up. And discipline referrals, so behavior, improves for both. So across the board, it's helpful. And that's the Boys and Girls Learn Differently program.
So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, what I learned from Michael Gurian about teaching boys in a faith setting, but we'll expand it, of course, to whatever it might be. You're listening to the Wonder Parenting Podcast, a brain science approach to parenting.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
So when I first got a hold of Michael, 18 years ago, is it? 17 years ago?
Yeah, it's almost 20. Yeah, right.
I wanted to learn how, as a pastor, but again, this could go to anybody who's working with boys, do a better job with our boys and also then our girls. And over the course of our relationship together, we created a rite of passage program that was faith-based, geared for congregations. We started with the boys program, and then we created one for the girls as well. And as we were writing that, we took Michael's stuff from The Purpose of Boys, and we used that sort of as the model for creating the curriculum. And then essentially it was my opportunity to write the sessions, the teaching sessions. And I wrote them in such a way that anybody can teach them. I wrote it out word for word, so you know exactly what to do. And these are some of the things that I found really important. And whether it's in a church classroom or it's a regular classroom or even at home working with your kids in homeschool, many of the things Michael's already talked about. One of the things that we did intentionally in the teaching of these sessions, and we shaped it a bit differently for the boys and the girls, but for the boys, I tried to make sure we had no more than 5 minutes of teaching time and then a break of some sort. Now, that might be too short in some settings, but that was kind of for what we were trying to do. But the point was talk a bit, but then give some sort of brain break for the boys to re-engage them. And it could be as easy as Michael said of doing a quick little pop quiz and throwing the ball to each person. What does this mean? What did you just learn? Oftentimes we would take the boys, because they're doing this with their dads, we would take them outside and do a quick competition, beanbag toss, whatever it might be. And I've over the years, Michael, I've learned to pit the boys against the dads. Mm. I used to do, you know, the boys and the dads together on one team versus boys and dads. I discovered that those dads are vicious when it comes to competition. You know, they want to beat their boys and the boys want to beat their dads. And what a good learning opportunity it is to have this activity together, learn how to win, learn how to lose, be able to congratulate each other when it's done. So we always tried to build in every 5 to 10 minutes max some sort of activity that is either related to the learning, may have nothing to do with the learning, but still going to cement it because we come back to it. So it's always a brain break of some sort. And the activities, a lot of different activities. It could be drawing something. It could be, I might ask the question, define hero for me and give them sticky note pads. And they just write down one word on each pad and how many words can they write in 30 seconds. And then you put them up on the wall so they can see all their different answers. And that was a learning I got from Kathy Stevens, by the way, who used to work for mm-hmm. Michael before she passed away. I was telling her that in our boys' Sunday school, because we separated the boys from the girls to give the boys a bit more space to be boys and the girls a bit more space to be girls. Not everybody has to do that, but that's what we tried. I said, my Sunday school teachers tell me that when I get to the discussion time with the boys just sort of answer with monosyllabic grunts. And I said, and I'm writing brilliant questions. and these are questions that should take the boys deep. And they're just, yep. And I said, so it's not the questions. So what's going on? And she said, you need to stimulate those boys' brains. And sometimes boys have a hard time getting their thoughts to their words, to their mouths. So give them little notepads and say, boys, here's what I want you to think about. Here's the question. And give them a minute just to write down some answers, to get some words on a piece of paper that will stimulate the conversation. We tried it, and my teachers came back the next week and said, man, that changed everything. Just giving the boys a chance to write it down before they spoke it. Now, some boys we know, right? You give them a question, and right away they can answer with a stream of words. And other boys can take several minutes before they figure it out. And writing is one way to do it. Tossing a ball, one way to do it, to activate. And so it was really about active learning in the end. Mm-hmm. Giving boys an opportunity to move, to stretch a little bit. And interestingly, we created some of that in our girls program. And over the years, they use less and less of that.
Right.
Even though it's okay, they use less and less of it because they don't need it, because the girls want to chat. They want to sit together and talk about it, and which is just fine. And that's why I think, Michael, one of the things I know you would agree with, that there are times when it's good to separate boys from girls, when there are certain subjects that you really want to get at, mm-hmm. where next week we'll talk about puberty. So you want the boys to be on their own, right, when you're talking about puberty, so that you can use phrases and words that boys would use that maybe they shouldn't be using in front of those girls or would be embarrassed to. And because boys don't like looking stupid in front of girls. And because girls tend to be better at verbals and they can express themselves better, we tend to feel intimidated by them sometimes if we can't get the answer out as quickly. So there are times when boys should be separated from girls. And going through a rite of passage program in middle school is one of those times. And that's what we wrote, using all this great research that Michael's done. And we've implemented that in our congregation, in the way that we put our worship services together. Everything goes about 10, 15 minutes, and then we take some sort of a mental break. We do something different. My sermons are 12 to 15 minutes long, rather than 45, because, you know, I can hardly sit that long, let alone the average person. So all the things that Michael's talking about for the way that boys learn, it really works. And I think most of us, once we're in an environment where it tends to be a bit more friendly to a male brain, we say, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And you've discovered that for 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah. The really neat thing is to see when people use this stuff, you know, and they go, wow, okay, that really creates social change.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just see this as one of the one of the deepest issues that our society faces, one of the most important issues because it touches everything else in life, is how to help boys succeed in life. And it doesn't mean we won't help girls. That's you know, right? We're all patterned to go, oh, but why aren't you talking about girls? And it's not about that. Of course, on another show, we would be talking about that. But the society is facing, our society is facing this systemic issue, which is of boys being purposeless, not being motivated, not learning as well as we need them to, not getting educations, you know, not being successful, not being good marriage material, not being able to grow up and father well. And the schools, and I'll include churches as well, play a huge part in this. And there's no malice. The fact that they're not, you know, that they didn't know about this stuff, there's no malice. It's just that it doesn't get taught to us. And when it is taught to us, like you taught your congregation, like I've worked in all the schools, you know, the rites of passage, when it does get taught and then people use it, I think it creates social justice. Like, I think it's in that category.
Yeah.
And we especially now know that is true because of the initiatives we work on both in the Head Start arena and also in the Helping Black Boys initiatives, like in Maryland, where these issues, you know, are doubled, right? Yep. Because you also have socioeconomic and you have some other things going on and they're doubled. But when we go in and we help the schools to utilize these strategies and to alter the system to, again, it doesn't harm girls, right? Because those are all co-ed. So no harm to the girls. Everyone's grades go up. But it also helps the boys and it cuts out some of the classroom management issues, the dropout rate, you know, it cuts down on these bad things. Because of course, anyone who drops out, you know, more potential to get into a gang. And so it really is to me a major social issue. Mm. And everyone who makes the changes to help boys learn better, I think we're actually fighting for social justice.
Yeah, that's well said. Michael, let's take the last 2 minutes and let's apply this to how a parent might help a son do his homework,
right?
It tends to be a lot of reading. He's got all this stuff to do at home. How can parents step in and help that boy break it up, give some mental breaks, help him out with some movement to imprint in a way that boys learn?
Yeah. All right. So first thing is make sure, like, if he's just done his athletics, okay, he's had some movement, some physical movement because he's doing soccer or whatever it is. Then he comes home and then we say, okay, time to do your homework. Well, okay, that's good, right? He's had physical movement. So he's all revved up. That's good. But still make sure he's eaten something. Mm. All right. So make sure his stomach's full with something, like some sort of protein snack or something that's going to help him. So two messages there are the food that he's eating a priori, and then moving around some, getting exercise so the brain's awake. And then while he's doing the homework, do ball toss if we want him to learn something, you know. So if we're engaged with him, let's say we're doing homework with him, let's toss the ball back and forth while we're reviewing the lesson for the quiz tomorrow. Let's have him move around. So even if he leans over the table to look at the book, he doesn't have to sit and look at the book. He can move around and then lean, and then he memorizes the poem or whatever it is, and then he moves around. And as needed, we throw objects back and forth so that right side of his brain's engaged also. And then he learns something, and like you've just said, he learns something, and then let's give him a brain break. So, I mean, if he's really, really concentrating, all right, we're not going to interrupt that. But right. But if we can tell, oh, he's been sitting there, he's starting to fidget, you know, then, okay, brain break. And brain breaks only are 30 seconds and you can get them. We have a bunch of them in my books, but you can also go online and type in brain breaks. And, you know, they're jumping jacks and there's 30 seconds for a brain break. What that does is it reengages the cerebellum, which then floods the upper brain with more chemistry, which is what you want for learning, because learning is happening up at the top of the brain, and reengages the cerebellum, gets it moving again. But it also releases all sorts of other dopamine, other chemistry that you want. So the brain break, and then, okay, he's back in it. And then as needed, if he's starting to fidget, okay, you can move around. And we just do that cycle. And that's, that's a better way for him to learn than us just trying to force him to sit at the table and do his homework.
Yeah. One final thing I would say, and I know, Michael, you would agree with this. If you are wanting to have an important conversation with your son, it could be about anything, you know, how you're feeling, or there's a disciplinary issue you need to talk about. One good way to do that is just to head outside and do one of two things, toss a ball back and forth, have a conversation together, or go for a walk and talk about it. Your son will be much more apt to have conversation that way, because it does what to the brain?
Yeah. So it's all that stuff, but like walk and talk, peripatetic, the Socratic method, you know, that's peripatetic. You're walking and talking. So that's, of course, releasing the neurochemistry, the cerebellum's involved, all the things we just talked about. You're an object moving through space, so the right side's involved. So more of the brain is now involved in talking about the thing that we want him to talk about. It's also parallel, right? It's what we call shoulder to shoulder. So all that stuff's involved, and we're not forcing his testosterone to flash and all this stuff by looking, trying to look him in the eye when he's under stress. And because when we do that, like, he knows he needs to talk to us about something, right? Because we're probing him. Well, it creates stress. And his vasopressin and testosterone, you know, these are like a territoriality chemical and aggression chemical. They're going to go up if we try to force eye contact and we're like in his face trying to get him to talk to us. So then that does exactly the opposite of what we want. That neurochemistry shuts down word centers and he's going to talk less, and it triggers amygdala, which gives him more anger, et cetera. So what we're going to do is we're going to walk shoulder to shoulder. We're not triggering the vasopressin and the testosterone and all of that. And then if we have wisely, like you said before, if we have wisely kind of introduced the topic that we want to talk to him about 10 minutes before, 20 minutes before, even an hour before, you know, and then he's able to do some gathering to get things going. And then now we're using a good method for him, walking and talking. And so therefore, for all those neural reasons, we're more likely to get what we want out of him.
Well, that's just the tip of the iceberg, and you can learn a lot more with Gurian's books, Saving Our Sons, probably the best one right now to be reading, Purpose of Boys. Anytime you want to just go to Amazon, books are there. Just type in Michael Gurian's name, and you're going to find a lot of good resources on girls as well. So, Michael, as always, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Tim. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone, and we will be back with you next week. We're going to talk about puberty. Dun, dun, dun. All right, next week. Thanks, everyone.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.